I'm going to move over.
That's what I was thinking.
And I'll leave the sign the way it is. And everybody will call me Karen.
I'll call you Miss Bright.
I'm going to call to order our city council meeting, City of Grover Beach, Monday, August 19th, 2013 at 6:30 p.m. And let's have a moment of silence now. And after that, I've asked Councilmember Marshall to lead the flag salute. Would you like to lead us
sure.
now?
Sure. Please remain standing and face the flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Could we have the roll call, please? Yes.
Oh, we can.
You can do that in your sleep. Oh, if we could have the roll call, please.
Here.
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 I'm here. And we'll do the agenda review, and this is the time that we review the order of business to be conducted. We receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Are there any changes here? Anybody want to?
None.
No? Okay. I think one thing I will do is, earlier on than usual, I'm going to make a few public announcements because we want to take advantage of some of the public being here tonight. So we may move some of our own announcements up a little bit. But seeing no changes, then I need a motion.
So moved.
Second. That would be to approve the agenda as noted.
Moved by Councilmember Lee and seconded by Councilmember Marshall. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. We have no ceremonial calendar this evening, and we are going to now do public communications. And this is the time that anyone can address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on anything that's not on the agenda tonight. So if you'd like to speak with us about anything not on the agenda, now is the time to do that. There'll be time later for other items that are already agendized. So if you could come forward and give us your name and your city of residence, and it looks like we have Kathleen Carl, is that right? I'll open for public comment.
Kathleen Carley, I'm a division manager with the County Public Health Department and a resident of Los Osos. One of the programs I manage at Public Health is the Injury Prevention Program. According to 2010 Office of Traffic Safety data, San Luis Obispo County ranks fourth in the state for the number of pedestrians over 65 who are injured or killed in accidents. There are 58,000 citizens aged 60 or older in San Luis Obispo County, and this population has increased by 29% in the last 10 years. Seniors often recover more slowly from injuries, requiring more care during the recovery process, and sometimes never fully regain their previous when a car was coming. 12 vehicles were cited, and 4 vehicles were given a warning. There was only 36% of the vehicles that at that time who actually stopped for the pedestrian in the crosswalk. On August 15th, same time, but now they're at Grand Avenue and 12th Street, they did the same thing. They had a decoy attempt, 26 attempts, and this time there was 42% compliance. Still extremely, extremely poor. What you should know is that Grover Beach PD has issued a total of 120 citations over the last 5 years for failure to yield to a pedestrian. Over the same time period, there were 37 vehicle versus pedestrian traffic collisions, and West Grand is identified as a high-risk corridor because of all these traffic collisions and because they're not stopping for pedestrians. There were 18 traffic collisions in this time period, resulting in 25 pedestrian injuries, and 4 of them were felony hit and runs. So we did the pedestrian stings. We're available to do more, and it looks like my time's almost out. We're available more education anytime you want. And I have some materials here that we'd like to get out to your community. And basically it says, stay alert, stay alive, every hour a pedestrian is killed or injured in California. And what we've got is the logos from the police departments who participated as well as the county. And I've got some large ones, I've got some metal ones that can go up on signs, I've got some smaller ones, and I'm looking for a way to get these out to the business community and to really raise awareness about this. A 36% compliance rate is terrible, and we want to do better.
Thank you. So don't go away, because I suspect that council members will have questions for you. I know Council Member Nichols had something, perhaps.
Yeah, I had spoke to you earlier this evening. I don't have any questions, but we do have an organization called Grover Beach United, and it is an organization of business people within this community. And if you will leave those posters with our city manager, we will make sure that they get to Grover Beach United and that they will understand the necessity and the need for distributing those to the businesses to post them in their windows.
That would be great. Thank you.
And I will certainly put them in my business windows. And I share your concern, and it's been something that's made me nervous. I know it's something that's been raised in the council before. I'm wondering if you have... are there other cities that you've done work in, too, or is it...
So it was like a small task force between Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Pismo. We don't have all the data yet, and that's what Councilman Nichols asked me. What happened in Arroyo Grande and Pismo? I don't know. They've got one more sting they're doing this week, and then we're going to compile the rest of it. We wanted to make sure to get on your agenda this month, because we have to report back really soon. But I will bring you the other data once we know what's going on in Arroyo Grande and Pismo.
That would be great.
You know, so at least we can compare. My guess is that they're not doing any better than you are. And that's my guess. And the problem is that pedestrians think because it's a crosswalk, they have the right of way. And technically, they do. The problem is, if it's between a car and a pedestrian, you haven't got a shot. You know, I mean, I learned something this past year. If you're hit by a car going 20 miles per hour, you have a 5% chance of dying. If you're hit by a car going 40 miles per hour, you have an 85% chance of dying. And none of us think 40 miles per hour is very fast, do we? But you're not going to survive if you're hit by a car.
Were there other questions or comments?
Just one, Kathleen. Was the intent of your metal signs to be given to the city to put on city property, like on light poles and whatnot?
We've got some metal signs, and I'm going to give these to the chief to put
Good.
Up on city property. And then these we want to get out into business windows. And we want to just raise the awareness that this is an important issue, and it affects all of us.
I agree. I have one last question, but it may be for Chief Copsey.
Yes, I was going to ask the chief if he'd like to come forward.
And I need a refresher course in the vehicle code.
And then what I'd like to do is ask the council if this is something maybe they'd like to agendize, because obviously it's not agendized, so we need to be careful about making decisions tonight. But even discussing it. So.
The question I had is just a basic question. At what point, if I'm on Grand Avenue and I stop for a pedestrian, at what point can I proceed if they've crossed the center divider, or do I have to wait for them to clear the crosswalk on the other side?
Good question.
I've asked that one, too.
Legally speaking, you're required to wait until they clear out of the crosswalk.
Okay. Good.
It makes it difficult because that's such a long crosswalk on Grand.
Right.
But legally, yeah, you're supposed to wait until they're safely out of the crosswalk.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Before the chief wanders away, I have a question that may be for both of you. Now, with the new median improvement center, median improvements that we're doing, is that considered a mid?
What we do is you know, to raise awareness is better for all of us.
Okay.
Thank you for your hard work and for your help with that. And I would like to ask the council if this is something you'd like to agendize once that you have more information for us, and we
sure. I could bring the rest of the data, and we could just do a mini little presentation on what a pedestrian should look out for when they're walking.
Probably a good.
Sounds perfect, and then we'll probably have some other questions for the chief then too, and we need a refresher course. Okay, good. Thank you,
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Just from my perspective, we'll be glad to agendize that. I know the council isn't aware of this, but myself, my wife, and my daughter were victims of a crosswalk accident in 1979. Now, I know that was a long time ago, but I still have the memories.
So. Oh, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So I think this is critical, and critical also because we, one of the things that back in 2006 in our visioning statement, what people in town said they wanted was more pedestrian-friendly Grand Avenue. So we've got a mandate, and we'll follow up on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other public comments on things that are not on the agenda tonight? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring this back to the council. And while you're all still here, I know that Council Member Lee had some council member items that he wanted to bring up tonight.
And with your assistance of
yes.
visual aids, that would be wonderful. It would basically be my Chamber of Commerce report. And this weekend is the Dune Run as well as the Stone Soup Festival. So the Dune Run is Saturday morning, and then immediately following that is the Stone Soup Festival for Saturday and Sunday. Obviously, visit the website. Facebook has got this little stone soupy guy that has been popping up all over the place, so hopefully everybody's aware of that. And then I get the opportunity to MC the doggy parade on Sunday at, I believe, 11 a.m. So a $1 costume parade for dogs with all benefits to proceed the... is there Soupy?
Soupy's
okay.
there.
Perfect. Okay. So with all benefits to go towards the South County Dog Park.
Thank you very much. And I had challenged Mayor Pro Tem Bright to do it with me again because 2 years ago we won in our age group. But she's not feeling too well, so I'm not sure. I hope some of you will come along and join me. You saw my check there. I'm signing up, so hope you'll keep me company on that walk. And I think that was one other thing I wanted to cover, too, and I don't see anyone here from Grover Beach United. Council Member Nichols mentioned them as a new local business group. But they asked me if I would let you know that they are going to be the team captains for the coastal cleanup on Saturday, September 21st. And that's normally when in the city of Grover Beach we do a Grover Beautiful Day and do some cleanup in the city of Grover. And we're thinking perhaps, and I'll bring this up a little later to see where the council is on it, but we thought perhaps the city might like to join in the coastal cleanup at that time instead. So we're inviting all of you. Come down to the end of Grand. Grover Beach United will be the team captains, and we'll be cleaning up the beach on that day, September 21st, 9 to 12. And anything else that comes up for the council, we'll take a little bit later in the meeting. Next, we have our public hearing, and that's the introduction and first reading of proposed ordinance amending Article 10 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to consent to the adoption of a city pipeline franchise and assignment to Phillips 66 Pipeline. And our city attorney is going to bring this report this evening.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, council members, members of the public. As indicated in the very brief staff report, we are still in the process of ironing out the details of the franchise agreement language. I received an email from Phillips 66 earlier today. It is still with their legal department, so I do not have even a supplemental copy to provide you with their corrections. Consequently, staff would recommend that you open the public hearing, continue it, to date certain, and we would recommend September 16th meeting at 6:30 p.m. here in Council Chambers. With that, I'll submit and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do council members have questions?
No.
My only question, and I think this will be for bringing it back, but presumably if it's a franchise agreement, there's some money involved.
Very minimal amounts. The fees are set by Public Utilities Commission. And I'm stepping on Gail's toes here, but I think it's about $1,200 a year.
Okay. So that's not something we can control. We can't say we need more because our costs have gone up.
Correct.
Rats. Okay. Sorry.
When this comes back to the council prior to the council meeting, could we get a map that shows where these lines run under the city?
I'll ask for one. It's not part of the franchise agreement, but I'll see if they have one. At 6:30 p.m. or as soon thereafter as it can be heard.
And so that would be our first reading, and we'll have a second reading after that, or will that be our second reading?
No, that will be the item from the beginning. It'll be the first reading,
okay.
First draft, introduction, and your action on it, whether it's to move it to a second reading or make changes to it.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we're moving into the consent agenda now. These are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. Is there anybody in the audience or the council who'd like to pull any of these this evening? Council?
Nope.
No? Okay. I will need to recuse myself for the program supplemental agreement for the West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project. That's item number 6, phase 3, because I have an office and my home in that area. So shall we do the others as a group? Or?
Since there's no discussion and nobody pulled any items, you can vote on it in its entirety on the consent, and your recusal will be reflected in the record.
Okay. All right. In that case, then, we'll need a motion for the consent agenda, and we'll do a roll call vote because two of them require a roll call.
I'll move for staff's recommendation on all items.
I'll second.
So moved by Councilmember Marshall, seconded by Councilmember Lee. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. So we have...
with the exception of item...
Right. With, yes, unanimous. So moving then to regular business, item number 7 is the request for waiver of underground utility and street improvement requirements due to hardship for development permit application number 1306. And our Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, is going to present that this evening.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. The request for waiver of underground utility and street improvement requirements refers to development at 192 South 9th Street. First, some background. At the July 9th, 2013 Planning Commission meeting, the Commission approved a development permit and use permit to allow a 320-square-foot expansion of an existing 384-square-foot food distribution center for low-income residents in the Five Cities area. The project site is an 18,750-square-foot parcel developed with two single-story structures, one at 384 square feet and one at 1,000 square feet, and a 30-space parking lot. As part of the Planning Commission approval, the project was conditioned to underground the overhead utilities along the northerly property line and to construct the curb gutter, sidewalk, and street conform improvements on Rockaway Avenue. The Grover Beach Municipal Code allows the council to waive all or part of these requirements where the application of the requirement would either create a substantial hardship, would be impractical, or would not be in the best interest of the city or the public. So first, to discuss the utilities, there's overhead utility lines located along the north property line of the project with a utility pole located at the northeast property corner. The in-lieu fee, although they didn't apply for it, it could be used as an approximation for the cost of undergrounding. The city's undergrounding in-lieu fee is approximately $300 per linear foot of property frontage and assumes that undergrounding would include primary and secondary electrical, cable, TV, and telephone lines. Given the project's 125-square-foot frontage, the in-lieu fee would amount to $37,500. In looking at street improvements, the site has existing street improvements, curb gutter and sidewalk along the South 9th Street frontage. However, there are no existing street improvements along Rockaway Avenue frontage. The development code requires construction of a new curb, gutter, sidewalk, and a street conform on the Rockaway Avenue frontage. The applicant is also required to design the proposed improvements. The project is proposed to be constructed by volunteers, so the project budget is minimal to cover materials and the items that cannot be obtained by donations. For this reason, the applicant is requesting that the construction and related design of street improvements be waived due to a hardship. Should the street improvements be waived, you should note that additional landscaping along Rockaway would also be waived. And it's also noted that an approved waiver would not apply to the South 9th Street frontage. Damage to the existing curb gutter and sidewalk along the South 9th Street frontage would need to be repaired or replaced as required by your city engineer to be consistent with city standards. Council has several alternatives to consider. The staff report includes two resolutions. One alternative would be to adopt the resolution denying a waiver of underground utility and street improvement requirements. Another alternative would be to adopt the resolution approving the waiver of underground utility and street improvements. And a third option would be to provide additional direction to staff. Based on the requirements in the municipal code, it is recommended that council adopt the resolution. Also, I went pretty quickly through the background on this, but the municipal code allows the council to waive all or part of the requirement. I'll point that out also. With that,
thank
that concludes
you.
My
helpful.
Report, and I'll be here to answer questions.
Thank you. Are there questions of Director Ray?
Yeah. One question. Is it not a requirement if they want to waive and pay the in-lieu fee, waive the requirement, pay the in-lieu fee, that has to be done prior to this action that's pending right now?
That's correct. So that the in-lieu fee is no longer applicable.
To this particular
That's correct.
Project. Is there? Did they give you any reason as to why they did not request to pay the in-lieu fee?
I would assume for the same reasons, but no, I'm not aware of the reason.
Okay, thank you.
City Attorney, you looked like... No, okay. Any questions down at this end?
I just had one clarification question, if I could. So the $37,500, is that the calculation for the street frontage on 9th and Rockaway?
No. Just the requirement, just the undergrounding requirement that's identified in the report.
That would be on the north property
frontage,
line.
Right.
Okay, great.
And one more clarification from Mr. Ray. When you said they're still responsible for repairing or replacing damaged sidewalk on 9th Street?
Yes.
Does that include the curb ramp as well at the corner of 9th and Rockaway?
Only if it's damaged. Doesn't require upgrades to it, for example.
So if it's not, if it doesn't meet existing standards, they wouldn't be responsible for upgrades?
We haven't imposed that in the past.
Okay.
Only where new curb, gutter, and sidewalk are constructed, and including the area of the curb ramp, have we required the ADA upgrades.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions before we... Okay, so we'll open to public comment now, and I understand that Fern Schlicht wanted to come forward, and we normally give you 3 minutes, but if you need a little more than that, then take what you need within reason. Thank you. No.
Your Honor and members of the council, thank you for letting me speak before you tonight. My name is Fern Schlicht. I live at 295 Alder Street in Arroyo Grande. I am president of the Five Cities Christian Women, an emergency food ministry providing food to prepare at home. We have a 501c3 status with the Internal Revenue Service. Our main function is to feed the needy, as we have been doing since 1973 continuously. Last year, we served 28,276 people. To date this year, 14,530 people, 5,156 of them are children. We are in need of an addition to our current location at 192 South 9th Street, Grover Beach. As an umbrella under Feed America and the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County, we must follow their new regulations. Among them, nothing can be sitting on the floor. Our shelving must be at least 4 inches off the ground, and we are running out of space for our food. We have to rent outside storage using funds that are really needed to feed and purchase our people. To purchase food for our people in need. There is no place to stockpile anything. I worry we will have to turn down donations that are coming to us for a lack of place to put them. This happened just a very short while ago. A beautiful assortment of broccoli came in. We didn't have an inch that we could put it, and we had to give it away. I think that's a shame. And when bad weather comes, our clients will be increasing dramatically. We are pushed to the wall right now. It would be our heart's desire to build a building that you would be very proud of, that would serve all of our needs. But I guess you can see that this is going to be an impossibility. Under the IRS, we are not allowed to use any of our money except for the purchase of food. We can have no fundraiser. This means we have to exist totally on donations from this caring community. Except for operating expenses, all funds must be used for food. We have a wonderful opportunity for an expansion through the Grover Beach Kiwanis Club, probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Ten years ago, they built the building that we are in now, and once again, they are willing to come to our needs. Our facility is served from 9th Street, where we have parking facilities for 29 cars off-street. The rear of the property faces Rockaway. That would be to an advantage for the people who actually live on Rockaway now and face our property. We operate with the board of directors, and we have approximately 100 volunteers. We have no paid employees. Our affiliation with the Central Coast Baptist Church has been great, and they provided for the land that we are currently located on. This is an opportunity for the city of Grover Beach to show their concern for the hundreds of people in need in this area, many of whom are from Grover Beach. We ask the council to approve the request for an addition to our existing structure and to waive the conditions that you are requiring, because as you can see, we absolutely do not have the funds to do anything about them. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. We pray that you will grant this because I think it's so desperately needed in this area. Thank you.
Would you mind staying put for just a moment in case we have questions?
Surely.
Thank you. Did any council members have questions?
Not at the moment.
Sure, I'll have one. excuse me. The majority of your clients, how does this operate? Do people drive up and pick up food, just the general public?
Yes.
Do they walk to the facility and pick up food? And do you deliver food?
Most of them, if they do walk, they of course use 9th Street.
Mm-hmm.
There would be no need for them to try to come into our activities off of Rockaway.
Where would they walk from?
Where are they from?
Well, if they walk, why wouldn't they'd only use 9th Street if they walk to your facility?
I would say in the general area that's close in.
Okay.
Most people come in their cars, and they do park in the parking lot. This better for you. I'm sorry, a little horse decided to come with me today for some reason or other. We have a chain link fence,
mm-hmm,
with a big gate that is padlocked. And when our clients come, that's open just shortly before 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They come in, come up to on a little sidewalk, come up to our door, and give their identification. We keep a card file so that we know who they are and how often they come. They're allowed to come twice a month. We'd like a week in between. And the food we give them is to take home and prepare at home. Not enough for one meal, but for several meals to hold them over while they are in need.
Okay, so when I went by over the weekend, I noticed there were a number of chairs and tables outside. Were there a number of chairs and tables outside?
Yes.
What's the point of that?
We have a row of chairs that were donated to us,
mm-hmm,
where people can sit down and wait if they're tired until it's their time to come up to the window.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily eat there or?
No.
Okay.
Nobody eats there at all. No, huh?
Okay.
We have a morning group that shop for the food, provide the food, clean it so that it's sanitary, and have it ready to be distributed in the afternoon. In the afternoon, there are three people, one who works at the desk, two who fill the bags for the people who come.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And then the business, so you have two existing buildings right now, and I probably missed this in the staff report. There's one, I thought there was a 1,000-foot building and a 380.
That's the church.
There's what?
That's the church, okay. So there is a church there, and then you only have the one 300 square.
The church is across the street on Rockaway. We're in their parking lot on the other side of the street.
Okay. I'm confused. I'm sorry. What's that? But it's all on the same property, though, right? Okay, so there are two buildings on the property in question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one of them is a church, though, or a fellowship hall?
Fellowship.
Fellowship hall, okay.
Yes, for the church. We don't use it.
Okay, mm-hmm. But the church uses it.
Yes.
And are they contributing, other than the property and the location, they're not helping financially?
They own the property that our building is on.
Okay.
But the building belongs to us, and the Kiwanis Club built it for us 10 years ago. Incidentally, I spoke to you 10 years ago. You remember me? I remember you.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
And don't go yet. I think Councilmember Lee has a question, and I do too.
Ms. Ferdinand, I have a question for you.
Oh, yeah. Come back.
I did have two questions for you, one of which is you mentioned the fence and that there was a condition and you were okay with the condition to rebuild the fence, or did I misunderstand that?
When we met before the Planning Commission, the information about the fence that was required came up. And it seemed to be an issue.
And any talk about what the cost would be to do? I know what it would cost if we were to take an in-lieu fee, but the cost that it would be to you to put in the curb gutter and sidewalk or to underground, has anybody given you any indication?
No.
Okay.
Not to me personally.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I
All
know
right.
It's not going to be 25 cents or something like that, you know.
Not the price of a good meal, no.
That we might be able to do.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your time, and I'll let you sit down now. And if there's anybody else from the public who'd like to come forward and speak about this, we'll try to keep it to 3 minutes from here on out. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? I understood that Fern Schlicht is the applicant. No.
Not really.
Well, then it's up to the applicant to come forward. You've got 3 minutes, so.
Four more.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. My name is Jeff Merksmer, and I'm a representative of the applicant, which is the church, and I belong to the Kiwanis Club of Pismo Beach, not Grover. You know, Fern gave a great speech. I'm not going to rehash the same things, but based on the cost of curb gutter, sidewalk, and overhead, which would be about $50,000 to $60,000, and the cost of the project, we have $10,000 budget. We spent two on plans and permitting, so we have $8,000 left. A lot of the material is going to be donated, so that $8,000 is going to be for the actual foundation and some of the stucco work, which hasn't been donated yet. We're hoping it will be, and all the rest of the wood, painting, drywall is all donated from local businesses. So, you know, as you can see, you know, even if we were to build that whole project, that building itself, it would only cost about $15,000 if we were to have someone come in and build it. So based on that versus the cost for curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and, you know, we're all volunteers. We don't make money off this. It's not a business. It's a charity. So that's why we're asking for financial hardship or I guess, the comparison of cost of the improvements versus the cost of the building.
Anybody have any questions of the applicant?
Not just yet, no.
Not yet. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else? Oh, sorry. Excuse me, Jeff. Come back.
You mentioned a figure of around, I think you said,
$50,000. Yep.
Have you got a breakdown on that?
We took the $37,500 that the city said in the in-lieu fee, and about $18,000 for curb, gutter, and sidewalks, about $90 a foot. And that's a good estimate. I've only got estimates. I don't have actual bids.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to come forward on this? Okay, seeing none, we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council for deliberation.
I did have one more question.
Sure.
I apologize for Director Ray. Have you looked at the curb gutter sidewalk along 9th Street, and or is that going to be part of the ongoing process? And is there a lot of, if you have looked at it, is there a lot of damage that needs to be repaired?
I did take a quick look at it. It doesn't look like there's an extensive amount of damage that needs to be repaired, no.
But there was something was mentioned about there being some damage or something that needed to be done there, and that's on 9th Street, South 9th Street. Okay.
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Okay. Well, we need to do some deliberating now.
Okay. I have one more question of staff. I have, as we have been listening to this report and the information provided by the public, I notice that I don't see in this report any place or in the resolution the name of the applicant. Is there a reason for that? I cannot find any place who, in fact, the applicant is.
I apologize, but I do have the file. No, it does not say in the report. The letter of application for a waiver came in under the title of the Kiwanis of Greater Pismo Beach.
Yeah.
And the signature on that is Mr. Merksamer.
And application was filed by Jeff Merksamer, Pastor Richard Bennett, and that's on the agenda.
And that's in the letter, request for waiver.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe a follow-up question to Councilmember Nichols' question. Does the applicant, where would it be appropriate to put it in here, or does it need to be in the resolution if we go that direction? As an identification?
There is not a need for it to be, but it would certainly clarify if the council wishes to add the name in there. We can do that. Simply in the first whereas, the city received the request to waive the requirements of underground utility lines. One, it would create a substantial hardship financial. For that, I would suggest to you, you would need to have information on which you could make that finding. In other words, how much money do they have? How much money can they raise, et cetera? The
not
second
enough.
One is impracticability, which is the one that the council has on prior occasions acted on these requests. And that is basically, as at least interpreted by the council, who interprets the code, has been interpreted as the cost of the public improvements that are being mandated by the code is so excessive to the size and the cost of the project that it becomes impracticable. And that is the method by which it's been measured in the past. The last one is that it's not in the best interest of the city or the public. It was public or the city. It's the city or the public. That, for example, could fall under the one that you were looking at. It's simply at this point in time, it's too early or it doesn't make sense. And if we, if the council breaks it up by the, separates in their action the overhead utilities from the street improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And we can adjust the resolutions to fit that if that is the desire of the council.
So the zoning is central business district of some sort, I suspect. And is it commercial or, Bruce, do you?
It's commercial.
It's commercial.
Yeah.
And so there's I think I heard there's the food shelter and then there's the fellowship, which is a hall of some sort, mm-hmm. a congregation hall. Would you consider that to be the ultimate development of this site? At some point, I suspect, these are older buildings, I take it.
Yeah.
So I would say eventually somebody's going to come in and they're going to upgrade this site. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in my lifetime, but I could look at this as being premature as far as the utilities go. And that's kind of my feeling. I don't see any real need. It's not going to impact anybody's view. I think it'll actually maybe detrimental to the neighbors because of all the people taking off the lines. Mm-hmm. So as far as that goes, and then I've got other discussion on the curb gutter and sidewalk, but if you want to break it down that way.
Sure, let's do that. Let's talk about the undergrounding first. Anybody else have comments on that?
I concur with your reasoning on the undergrounding utility lines. That was sort of my take on this whole project, is that we do not require the undergrounding of the utility lines, but the curb gutter sidewalks, another issue that we ought to, again, we'll discuss that in a minute. Okay. So I concur with your opinion.
And I have nothing new to add to either of those comments.
And I'm in agreement on that I believe that would be a hardship and impractical in terms of the neighboring buildings and in terms of where they are in development. So I think we've got consensus on that, then, that the undergrounding isn't something that we would want to move forward with requiring. And so then we come to the second issue, which is the issue of curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and we have two issues. We have the one side that has none, and then we have the other side on 9th Street that needs some minor repairs, I take it.
Actually, we just have one issue.
Oh, we have one issue?
Rockaway only.
Rockaway is our only issue?
Yes.
Okay, South 9th is fine. Nothing needed?
The waiver does not apply to South 9th.
Oh, okay. Okay, all righty. So, Rockaway.
Well, let me tell you what I think on this. I'm not so keen in waiving that. I think the curb, gutter, and sidewalk is a necessity in the community, and especially being the proximity of the elementary school is only two blocks away. I think I heard Ms. Schlick mention that children do walk by from school. They also do provide a service to their clients, who is the public, and I believe the public needs to walk outside the street, although they're saying they'll only walk on 9th. It's hard to regulate that. I'm more in favor of not waiving the curb, gutter, and sidewalk. However, I would be in favor of entertaining an idea of, I think one of the options we have under council authority is to extend the time for compliance. And we can extend the compliance time a couple of years or whatever we see fit for them to go out and find the money. And I'm thinking, I heard, thank you, Bill, for asking the question, somewhere around $18,000 to put in the improvements. They could do fundraisers, I believe.
No.
You can't do fundraisers, but you can get Qantas or to do fundraiser on your behalf or other organizations.
They can accept donations.
They can accept.
And the source of the donation is not controlled. In other words, it could be from the fundraiser, by Rotary, or by one.
So that's kind of where I was leaning on the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and I'll probably be tarred and feathered for
those. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, we're talking about $20,000. I don't think that's a large obstacle. And if the Kiwanis Club and other civic organizations are behind this organization, and I certainly am behind them 100%. Mm-hmm. We are behind the People's Kitchen, which also provides a service for the homeless people in this community. So I support your organization 100%. But I also have to consider the rest of the residents that live in this city, what the long-term goal of this council and the council prior to this one has been, which is to improve this city insofar as the curb, gutters, and sidewalks are concerned. So I would be inclined to agree with Councilman Marshall that we do not waive the requirement for curb, gutter, and sidewalk.
Councilmember Lee?
Actually, I'll hop in here and say I was actually thinking of going in a slightly different direction. And I don't know if this is even an allowable option, so maybe staff can direct me towards that, is going back to Councilmember Marshall's comment of the highest and best use of the property, whether we waived the condition for or the requirement for curb and gutter, but required a installation of a sidewalk along the Rockaway frontage. Realizing that's a piecemeal, there's sidewalk on both sides, so at least there would be a connecting sidewalk through the property. Again, not knowing if this is an acceptable alternative.
Any old part of the requirement is the language that would permit the city council to have that option. I will defer to the city engineer if one can effectively lay down sidewalk without having a curb.
And I apologize. I should have clarified. For this option that I'm putting forward, it would not need to be a concrete sidewalk. It could be DG or some other established. I know in other locations we've allowed DG or decomposed granite sidewalk.
The only concern that I would have with that, and again, running it by the city engineer and potentially our claim administrator, is that it is a public roadway. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be maintained in a condition that can't be questioned from a standpoint of liability. Okay. So unimproved may be actually a better option than half improved.
Okay.
Would you like me to weigh
Director
in on
Ray,
that?
Director Ray, yeah.
Well, you could construct a concrete sidewalk with, for example, an asphalt curb, asphalt berm. There's some savings there. It's not significant, but there's some savings. You might save in the neighborhood of $5,000. And no gutter, so you know there's quite a bit of concrete and quite a bit of forming savings there. In terms of a path of some sort, I would concur with the city attorney's concern regarding a path, in that if that were to become a city maintained pathway, it requires a lot higher degree of maintenance and attention than would a normal concrete sidewalk.
Anybody else got any other comments?
I would like to comment on that. I think we're starting to set a bad precedent if we start making exceptions. Maybe you can do this instead of that, and maybe do that instead of this, and on another project, maybe you can do this instead of that. I would much prefer to see this council stay together, and we either waive it or we require it.
Right.
And I think, to me, that's a much better way to go.
Yeah, we need to follow the city standards when we do something like this. I'm still of the opinion that, you know, there is some time frame that's possible. The ordinance allows us that flexibility, and that would give them time to come up. Now, the hard thing about that is we would issue a permit, they could move in, and let's say they didn't meet the requirement in 2 years or whatever the time frame. I mean, how do you kick them out? Do we require a bond?
I think one of the solutions which would require participation of the property owner would be an agreement which would permit the city, let's say, in a period of 2 years, if this is not completed, to complete those improvements and lien the property on a tax lien.
That's an excellent idea.
And would be collected at that point in time. But that, recognizing the burden, would then fall not on the applicant, but on the property owner.
On the property owner.
So they would have to consent to that.
But they are part of the applicant. Pastor Richard.
That is correct.
Burnett, I believe, represents the property. That seems like an excellent idea. So there's no initial cash overlay. They can move forward with this notable.
So I have a question. Is this something that could possibly be considered under Safe Routes to School? I know we've already had quite a lot of assistance with that particular school. Director Ray, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the answer.
Really want to reach out to children locally and have, I understand it, deep pockets. Safe Routes to School might come back up, and I have the sense that there may be some foundations that might be able to help us with this. And so I'd like to weigh in, because I've known of the Five Cities Women, Christians Women's work for many, many years, and having been to many of the churches in town, and I know that you all work tirelessly, and that I'm sorry that you need another building. I wish we didn't have the need for another building in terms of people still being hungry. I really support having it be healthy and having it be up to the most modern possible standards. I had a circumstance in my life not so long ago where I needed 1 month food and was very embarrassed to have to go get food. And the food I got was so moldy I couldn't use it, and so but I went out of town because I was too embarrassed to do it in town. So it wasn't your food. I should have come to see you instead. But the point is that it is really important, if we're serving a human need in the community, it's important that we serve it in a hygienic fashion and we provide them with food that really works, that's healthy food. And so I see a whole lot of different sides to this, and hygiene's critical. You do have to have things continue to move upwards in standards. There is obviously a hardship. I have no question that there's hardship, because you don't have a way to raise funds except for food. We've also got an unusual situation where you are effectively tenants. You've built the unit on the property, but you're basically tenants. You don't own the land itself. And so that makes it a little bit different. And I think that, you know, we have the opportunity as a city council sometimes to show the same mercy and grace that you've shown to the community for, I don't know how many years, decades. How many? 40 years, four decades. And so I have to say I feel a little bit differently about it. And I think the same argument applies that this property really hasn't been fully developed. And then there is the other side of it, which is that it is important for our town to continue to improve, and we do need curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and so we may need to address that in some other ways. So my weighing in would be to say thank you, and we need you. We can't provide ourselves what you're doing as a community partner, and I have to say I feel differently about it. I would, if the council were to vote that that we were to give them 2 years and then we could lien the property, or were to vote that you know, something even stricter than that, then I certainly would feel in that if we were to ask that they have the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, that we need to be partners in as much as we can. We can't bind ourselves to it, but just as a matter of mercy and grace, that we need to be partners in finding that $18,000 to $20,000. So that's my take on it. And is there anything, any other comment or feedback? Or
no, my only comment is if you want to take that on yourself as a partner with them to raise money for the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, so be it. You can do that. But I don't think I would like to commit the city to that.
I'm not asking us to commit the city. I'm saying it's a moral obligation. Mm-hmm. It's not a civic obligation.
Okay.
So, given that.
seeing my attempt at somewhere in the middle, not going anywhere, I'm actually going to weigh in on very similar to what the mayor has indicated, in the fact that I think the service that this organization provides to the city outweighs at this moment the need for curb, gutter, and sidewalk, realizing that this is not the highest and best use of this property. And as if they were to come back forward, then the city could require the curb, gutter, sidewalk requirement. So I guess from that perspective, I wouldn't be supportive. I'm very aware of the need for curb, gutter, sidewalk and appropriate development throughout the city, but I think that the need at this point that this group provides outweighs a hardship for them to install this at this point.
And I'll just contradict that in the fact that they're expanding their operation, once again very notable, which is bringing more people to the site, and we have to bring the people to the site safely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you need the curb, gutter, and sidewalk. I think we've got a good compromise, as our city attorney had mentioned, if we agree to a time extension, if we go this direction, and we agree to a time extension that gives them enough time to go out and find funding to put it in. We're not asking them to do it right of way, but when you bring the public to your...
Okay. The only other thing I would weigh in on is that in addition to being a rather unusual tenant scenario here, it's also a 501c3. So it's there are people who can donate. There are people who have enough money to donate. They're out there. And someone might need a great tax write-off soon, we hope. So I think you should make your motion, and we'll see where we go.
Well, I'll give it a shot here. So I'd like to make a motion that the City Council adopt the resolution to approve the waiver for undergrounding the electrical utility lines, and that we make a finding that's appropriate to our ordinance, such that it may be premature development under the
That would be under the not in the best interest of the city or the public.
Not in the best interest of the city or the public, although if that seems defensible to county or to the city council.
I think again,
okay,
it is your choice onto which findings you wish to base that on. I think that the clear evidence before you, if you wish to pursue it and anchor the motion on, is that the $37,000 in the costs that have been estimated is impractical as compared to the size of the project. Having said that, you're also going to be acting on the next item,
yes,
which is $20,000, and comparing that to the size of the project. So perhaps not in the best interest of the city or the public would be the route to take at this point in time.
For the finding that it's just not in the best, that the underground, the existing utility is not in the best interest of the public. And then I'd like to further clarify the motion in stating that the city did not approve the waiver for a curb gutter and sidewalk, but instead allow the applicant to enter into an agreement.
And Councilman Marshall, it would be my recommendation that you do split these. If you are going to, mm-hmm, to take two separate actions on the two different requests.
Good idea.
For various reasons, it may be more efficient to make a motion on the utilities, underground of the utilities, and the resolution will reflect that. And then we'll have a second resolution based on the second motion and its projected success.
So that's my first motion.
Is there any other discussion?
And I'll second that motion.
Any discussion on that? Okay. So moved by Councilmember Marshall and seconded by Councilmember Nichols. Could we have roll call on that, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. And was that the one where we had suggested adding the name of the applicant?
Yes. If you
should,
I'll,
we?
I'll amend my motion.
Staff will make that change.
Okay. All righty. And right, number two.
Well, actually, at this point, would you, knowing the direction that I'll be going in the motion, do you want to invite the applicant, or should I just make the motion, but invite the applicant to see if they want to?
And the call is to the mayor. If the applicant does not seem it's feasible for them to raise $20,000 in 2 years, it would probably be a good time to find out.
Mr. Mark Hammer.
I think it's possibly it's feasible, but I would rather postpone this for the fifth member to have a vote.
Is your group happy with that? Are you all?
I think so. Yeah.
You're all on board with that?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This is a democracy, so I thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
But you are the applicant. Thank you. Okay, so it would be your preference that that we wait before we take a vote on that, or see where we land tonight, and then...
No, I think what I heard the applicant said, that before you take action on the second item, they wish to have five members deliberating it.
Yes.
And staff can return with an adjusted staff report.
At our next meeting, August.
At your next meeting.
September.
September. Projected 2nd. Currently to be September 16th.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. We are going to be asking you to give us a break on the 3rd.
So in that case, my next motion will be to continue this hearing until date certain, September 16th,
okay,
at what time we will act upon the second curb gutter and sidewalk waiver.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you all for your time and all your service. And so we'll rehear this again when all five of us are sitting on September 16th.
And there is a motion.
But we need
table.
To have a second and a...
I'll second that.
Okay.
And voice vote is fine.
And voice vote's fine. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Okay. That's unanimous. Thank you. So we have another similar hearing coming up, and that is going to be...
in the best interest of the city or the public. The property owner met with city staff and indicated their intent to submit an application for approval of a 400-square-foot addition. Overhead utility lines are located along Seabright Avenue, with a utility pole located at the southeast property corner. Electric service to the property is currently provided by overhead lines along the property frontage and a midline connection. I'll call the midline tap. The development code does not require undergrounding for this type and scale of project unless there's a utility pole located on the property. The applicant has contacted PG&E and obtained an estimate of $10,000 for the work that PG&E would do for the undergrounding. The applicant also claims there are other costs associated with the undergrounding and is estimating a total cost of $15,000. The applicant has estimated he could complete the addition for $25,000 by doing much of the work himself. And the applicant claims that the cost of undergrounding would prohibit him from constructing the room addition and thus is a substantial hardship. In addition, the applicant has pointed out that placing his lines underground would not improve the appearance of the neighborhood because there are other overhead utility lines, including midline taps, that would remain immediately adjacent to his property, and thus the appearance after undergrounding would not be improved. The council has the following alternatives to consider. You could adopt the resolution denying a waiver of underground utility requirements, adopt the resolution granting the waiver of underground utility requirements. I'll add in there a reminder of the partial waiver of the requirements, and you could provide additional direction to staff. Based on the requirements in the City Municipal Code, it is recommended that the City Council adopt the resolution to deny the waiver of underground utility requirements.
And if I may, Honorable Mayor, Council Members, unlike, as I understand it at least, unlike the prior applicant, this applicant is still eligible for a new fee. Should you, for example, deny the request, they could pay the in lieu fee, because this application hasn't come in yet. This is a prospective waiver, for lack of a better word.
That's correct. With that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Director Ray?
Yeah, I have a question. And, Greg, I realize that these codes were probably established before you got here, but the requirement for them to underground the utility lines exists because there is a utility pole on their property, which is right at the, if you're standing looking at the house, the right front corner, the front of the property. Is that correct?
That's correct. Without the pole being located on the property, the requirement would not exist.
Okay. And do you have any idea why that particular situation exists? Why, simply because there's a pole there, they're required to do it? I don't know myself.
I did some research, and at the time that this ordinance was being passed, the City Council at the time brought up that there was an opportunity, where in most cases this would be waived, but that there was an opportunity that if a utility pole existed on the property, undergrounding the lines would be much less costly, much easier to accomplish. And so the original adoption of the ordinance was continued. That item was added in. Where the pole exists on the property, then the requirement would be for undergrounding, and the ordinance was adopted with that in place. And this was around 2004.
Okay. That's all I have at the moment.
Councilmember Lee.
A logistical question, if I might. So in driving by, obviously it appears as if telephone poles are placed about every second house. So the undergrounding, if it was to occur, would basically drop down at this pole, go under, and a new pole would need to be installed, or PG&E could, in some circumstances, basically underground to the next pole. But effectively, my thought would be that a new pole would need to be installed so that the undergrounding along the frontage would then come up and go back aerial. So we wouldn't be losing any poles. We would basically be replacing one pole for another.
As this has been applied in past projects, it relates only to the service lines. So, the requirement says all lines shall be undergrounded, which in this case, if all lines were undergrounded, you're right. It has been interpreted that way in the past.
Is that how it's been applied?
It has been applied, I believe. Not since I've been here, it hasn't been applied that way, but I think it
I
has
do not recall the last instance when this particular situation was faced by the council. Generally speaking, and Mr. Buckingham, jump in, the service lines from the pole to the house need to be underground as part of any development project. And the situation where a pole is on the property and requiring undergrounding of that connection, is not something that, at least in the last 12 years, I recall being before the council as a waiver or an issue.
So what are we looking to waive, right? Are we looking to waive just the service lateral? Is that what's... And the cost they got from PG was $10,000 to just underground the service lateral?
Doesn't that also include a pole replacement, though?
No, it doesn't. If you read in the staff report, that PG&E has provided some general information about the undergrounding, and it apparently requires some tree removal, relocation of existing underground utility pole box, rerouting of some of the existing underground lines to make this feasible.
So if not waived, and I don't have a clear picture, obviously, of this, so if not waived, if I may, Mayor, would it remove the existence of the pole that's on the property? In other words, if they had to move forward with the undergrounding, the pole would still remain.
The pole would remain.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I misunderstood. So this is just for the service laterals, then, from the pole to the house?
And actually, it's from the middle of the line, because it doesn't come up. The service lateral doesn't come from the pole. It comes from the line. Yeah, it's goofy, okay. But it happens everywhere.
Right.
Can you tell us what the cost of the in-lieu fee would be?
If it's a 50-foot lot,
yeah,
it would be $15,000.
$15,000, right.
Okay. I'm really confused. So if I look at the ordinance, it basically says, the way I read it, it says you have to underground the line, the main line, plus the service line. I think it says plus service line.
The service line is always, the line from the pole to the house is...
Should always be, and that's pretty typical. Yeah. And so really, that's what we're being asked to waive in this case, is just the service line.
No.
No?
It's the line running... To the pole,
just the service lines, right? Just the service lines. Interpretation's been made in the past that for single-family residents, it's just the service lines.
Just
the,
so that's
from
all we're looking at.
From the pole to the house.
So this is a waiver to not for the
overhead utility proper lines along the frontage.
So just a waiver to run the line to the house.
That's correct.
Ah, okay.
So be it.
So, yeah, it's a waiver to run the line to the house.
Okay. Okay, now I'm clear on the project. Thanks.
So if we're clear on the project, are there our figures still right here? It's still an in-lieu fee of $15,000 or roughly $13,000?
In-lieu fee would not be applicable. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize the nature of the request. And are we sure that request falls under the provisions of the code?
Yes.
Could I just get a number right, though? Then it's still $13,000, the quote PG&E gave, just to underline the service lines. It's still going to cost roughly $13,000.
$10,000 from PG&E, and the applicant has estimated an additional $5,000.
Okay, 15, same as the in lieu. Okay, which doesn't apply anymore. Okay. I'm going to open this to public comment. Do you want to come forward and say anything?
No, there's not really anything else to say.
Okay. Okay, thank you. We'll close it for public comment then. Let's have some discussion.
That seems like an awful lot of money to underground the service line. Because it seems to me they could get a private contractor to go through and underground all the conduit from the meter to the pole and then PG&E. But I don't know. Maybe it would be nice if we could bring up the owner just to ask a question of the letter that PG&E sent.
Are you knowledgeable? Could you answer?
If you know.
Yeah. Thank you. Wait till you get up here because we want to come up and speak because we need to hear you on the mic.
So you're in... First up, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
I guess you have to give your name and...
Yeah, if you want to give us your name and city of residence, we know where you live.
Yeah.
My name is Julie Van Boglen, and I live in Dover Beach.
Julie, thanks for stepping up. I was just kind of curious. So you're asking to have just the service line waiver, and PG&E gave you a price of $10,000?
Right.
What I would consider in the street, and the service facility would be what I would consider from the pole to the house. Or am I reading that incorrectly?
The letter from PG&E indicates how they intend to provide service to this property underground. It's not related to undergrounding the overhead lines on the frontage. It's basically saying in order to provide service to this property, distribution and service facilities will be installed to and within the project in accordance with, you know, and et cetera. So if you look at the applicant's letter, apparently in their discussion with PG&E, it identifies that includes, you know, tree trimming, installation of an underground utility box, moving existing underground service currently routed to the other side of the street. And so there's obviously a little more to this than just simply bringing the conduit down the pole into a pole box and then routing it across the property to their utility box.
There shouldn't be.
I don't. But it does occur. I mean, there are cases where either the distribution isn't appropriate at that site. You know, this might be the last line on the distribution side, or the there's existing underground already there that then undergrounding this wouldn't make sense. You'd have to enlarge the box. So a lot of these cases come up, and I can speak to that from experience on some of our city projects. Yeah. It's not always cut and dried.
Yeah,
I could also answer with your permission the question, does it seem expensive? I think our experience has been that PG&E does run a little bit more in terms of installing those facilities, but without more information here, it's just hard for me to determine that. So.
Is this something that we could go away and get more information and have maybe a clearer answer to what the real cost would be? Conversation with PG&E or a meeting with PG&E and you and the applicant?
Well, this is a true estimate of the cost from PG&E.
Oh, okay.
Because if the applicant went directly to PG&E, they're saying it is in the, let me get the exact language, it says the order of magnitude is 10,000. So, you know, I think that means 8 to 10 is probably what they're, or 8 to 12. You know, they're saying it's basically about a $10,000 project.
Okay.
And they're usually pretty good. They've been trying very hard in years past to give you an accurate estimate of what they're going to charge you. So.
All right. Any other comments from the applicant or conversation? Okay. Thanks for coming up on that. We'll close the public comment.
Wait, let me weigh in on this.
Sure.
I think we have a case here again where we have a local resident who is trying to better their property. Obviously, they want to stay in Grover Beach. If you'll note by the letter that they submitted, they also take care of the vacant house that's been vacant for 13 years on the adjacent property. Obviously, an effort to keep the neighborhood in good condition, keep homeless from invading that empty property. I think they've done an outstanding job. I think they sound to me like really solid citizens of this community. I think that's asking too much of them to put out for the addition that they want to put on their home. I am personally, I think it's a tremendous hardship on them, and I would not hesitate to waive on a hardship basis the requirement. That's my recommendation.
I would support Mr. Nichols.
Okay. How about a motion then?
Then I will move that that we approve the resolution which waives the fees for undergrounding the service line.
I'll second.
So we have a motion from Councilmember Nichols, a second from Councilmember Marshall. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Help us. I want to be you.
There you go.
Okay, Councilmember Nichols, that's up as yes. Councilmember Marshall?
Yes.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Representative Bright is absent. And Mayor Peterson?
Yes.
Honorable Mayor, Council members, staff will, for the purposes of evidence to support the findings of hardship, assume that the Council relied on the last sentence in the third paragraph of the letter, which says, I simply cannot afford this and will be forced to cancel the plan addition to my home unless the city grants an exception. Since we have no financial evidence, no evidence of financial status of the applicant.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And Although it's slightly out of order here, because we'll have a few other things to discuss later, I'm wondering if the council would like to consider for future, perhaps reconsidering this particular ordinance that probably needs some work for the future, especially since we have two.
And simply if the right estimates were provided, correct estimates were provided, it would work. Is there a different direction from you, simply so when we move forward we have a better idea of what it is that this council is looking for as far as clarification of this ordinance?
And the poll, we need to discuss it first.
Well, I can tell you right now, and the poll being on the property is that's got to be cleared up.
And I came to this following a conversation with the city manager, who had some good suggestions, but for the life of me, I can't remember what they are now.
realistically, mm-hmm. it is just making sure that we go back and treat everyone equitably and proportionately to what they're intending to do.
Okay. Does that sound good?
Yeah. Yes. That okay. And the intent of the ordinance. What are we trying to do?
Right.
Okay.
You're free to go. You got it.
Thanks.
Congratulations. Good luck with your project.
I would I'm the mayor. I get to say that.
Oh,
go
I'm
away.
Sorry.
And I also, you're free to go.
I also
thank
would like
you.
To thank you for coming this evening.
Yeah.
And you're good residents here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck. Invite us when you do your open house. All right. So... next item on the agenda is to consider the Planning Commission recommendation on greenhouse gas reduction measures to be included in the draft climate action plan. Community Development Director Buckingham.
Thank you. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the council. I wanted to give you some background tonight. This item has been before the Planning Commission three times, but not to the council yet, and so I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about climate action plans tonight. But in November of 2011, a $400,000 grant was provided or made available through PG&E, Southern California Gas, and the SLO APCD. And it was to collaborate on preparing individual climate action plans for participating cities. Consequently, in February of 2012, the council did agree to be part of the grant and move forward with the preparation of the climate action plan. Five other cities are also participating: Rio Grande, Atascadero, Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and Pismo Beach. The APCD did an RFP and ultimately contracted with Rincon Consultants in San Luis Obispo to prepare the draft climate action plan for those six participating cities. In November of 2012, Rincon released the model toolbox, as they call it, of potential greenhouse gas reduction measures as the first step in moving forward with adoption of this climate action plan. The toolbox, and I'll get into a little bit more detail, but it consists of 36 potential measures, each of which have several options or required actions, which are all part of the overall measure in trying to reduce greenhouse gases. It's been an open and transparent process. The toolbox, all the cities and additional information can be accessed on a project website that was created just for this, www.centralcoastghgplanning.com. So we get in the fundamental question is, what is a climate action plan? It's a policy document for measuring, planning, and reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but it's equivalent to a housing element. It is simply a policy document that creates goals and implementation measures that we would be acting on. Greenhouse gases are measured in metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, or CO2. As a reference point, what does that equate to? One metric ton of CO2 is equivalent to the emissions emitted by powering the average American home for 1 month or driving 2,000 miles in your vehicle. Cities prepare individual climate action plans that are customized to the local conditions to achieve the largest and most cost-effective emissions reductions that are also in alignment or consistent with other city goals and policies. Climate action plans generally include an inventory of existing and projected greenhouse gas emissions, a reduction target, measures or actions then to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, and finally some kind of implementation and monitoring plan. Most implementation measures identified in a climate action plan do not go all in effect immediately. It will take time to implement these over a several year process, and then the continued monitoring of those as well. So why are climate action plans being prepared? In 2006, the state government passed Assembly Bill 32, which established a target of reduced statewide greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020. In order to achieve this, the adoption of the Climate Action Plan would allow the city then to demonstrate compliance with state law AB 32 and the other state requirements for addressing greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gas emissions are now part of mandatory element of CEQA analysis and must be considered in all CEQA documents the city completes. If you have an adopted climate action plan, that would allow the city to utilize streamlining procedures, the CEQA streamlining procedures, for projects in the environmental review process. So if a project then comes before the council or is part of the environmental review and it's consistent with an adopted climate action plan, then the project is considered to not have a significant environmental impact under CEQA on greenhouse gas emissions. In addition, in 2010, when the city did adopt its land use element, goal LU27 does indicate that the city shall adopt a climate action plan. So if the city elected not to address greenhouse gas emissions, the city would not be able to demonstrate its compliance with AB 32 and would not benefit from that CEQA streamlining, which means every project then would have to go through an individual analysis of its greenhouse gas emissions. So the toolbox reduction measures provided in the staff report, there was a somewhat reduced but elaborate matrix of these 36 potential greenhouse gas reduction measures for consideration by each city. So the idea was they provided us a whole slew of things to consider, then each city taking into consideration its own unique considerations or characteristics can choose between those and basically determine which ones are most appropriate for, in this case, Grover Beach. Each of these measures within that spreadsheet that you don't see are programmed and populated with land use data and other additions that were required to be made by city staff. The greenhouse gas reduction measures were grouped into six categories, as you saw: energy, transportation and land use, off-road, water, solid waste, and trees and open space. And just in case somebody's watching out there, this was basically what was provided to the council in the summary. The category, the measure name, a description, how it applied to the community, what the potential greenhouse gas reduction was in metric tons of CO2 equivalent, talked about whether it was something that could be voluntarily done or would be a mandate, how it would be implemented, the aggregate cost to both the city and the community. So all sorts of good data. And again, this is available on that website for anybody in the public that wanted to review this more. So the public process began as early back as November 2012 when RENCON held a public workshop at the Ramona Center to obtain public input on those preliminary measures. Subsequently, this item went to the Planning Commission in February for a study session only to get public input, familiarize themselves with these 36 measures, as well as review the target reduction. Following that meeting, it was determined that the number of jobs projected in Grover Beach had been overstated, and we went back and working with the consultants, they recalculated that, and the reduced number of jobs significantly reduced the target reduction. So we brought it back to the Planning Commission in March, held another public meeting. They made a recommendation to the council, and then subsequent to that, there were some additional changes to the traffic model, and some other changes, and that again further reduced the greenhouse gas target measures. So staff then determined it would be best to take it back to the Planning Commission for one final look, and in July they did that, and that's the recommendation before you tonight. So the final commission consideration was the requirement for a target reduction of 5,715 metric tons of greenhouse gas. And through review again of those 36 measures, the commission, looking at all factors, including the time and cost of city staff to implement, they selected 18 of the measures, which would have a total reduction of 5,716 metric tons, or exceeding the target goal by one metric ton. So I didn't elaborate on the 18 measures. If the council has any questions, I'd be happy to go through those. In conclusion, staff's requesting the council review the commission's recommendation to incorporate these greenhouse gas measures into the draft climate action.
Question for you. Why did San Luis not participate in this?
They have already adopted a climate action plan, as has the county, or the county is working on theirs independently.
Okay. Gotcha. And then, actually, I'll end up with two more questions. I apologize. So the when it first started, it was going back to a reduction towards 1990 greenhouse gas emissions. And then somewhere in the middle, it changed to 15% below 2005 baseline. So is there an appropriate discussion, or was that just something that happened during the process?
No, I believe that it is a 15% reduction from 2005 lands you to a 1990 level.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Great. And then my last question is, where can we cut one more point? And the reason I ask that, partially tongue-in-cheek, is because I think the Planning Commission did a great job of coming forward along with staff's assistance to say, look, we need to reach 5,715, so why not hit that number?
Yeah, so, and I would point out that the Planning Commission, again, was very thorough, and what they ultimately did in their final recommendation was eliminate some of these small achieving reductions, which alleviated time for staff to actually implement or monitor those things. Now, I will say that there are things that aren't necessarily part of this recommendation that are going to be done anyhow. I mean, we all have goals of recycling at public events. We all have the desire to plant more street trees. So it's not that those things, you have adopted policies already in your land use element for those things. So it's not that this action is inconsistent with that. We just don't have to monitor it through this particular program.
And just maybe this is a comment, so I apologize, and maybe I need to hold it, but I know one of the items that was taken off the list was a adhering to a higher Title 24 standard, because there was not a trade-off of most developments go towards a higher Title 24, or California code requires that almost, so there was no real reason to increase the ante, so to speak.
And that's a great example. I mean, the Title 24 energy efficiency standards in California continue to rise every 3 years when we adopt a new building code. But this doesn't preclude developers or applicants from coming in with buildings that are LEED certified, which would be higher. So we're not precluding anybody from, we want to achieve higher energy standards. We just didn't need to adopt something that said, you shall do it. We're still making it voluntary.
Councilmember Marshall.
That's a lot of measures. So, if at all, I see in the conclusion that we have the ability to. What am I trying to say? It's getting late. We can remove some of these measures if we see fit. I don't necessarily need to go through that exercise right now, because that's what you'll be doing, and that would be my encouragement to staff is, the simpler this becomes, the easier it is to implement. And if you have 34 measures, it's just going to be unruly. So do your best to.
And again, I think the staff and certainly the Planning Commission, we looked at that in particular. And when you look at the 18 measures that would be included in the draft climate action plan, you know, I would point out that there are several things like promoting or continuing expansion of sidewalks or bike lanes. Again, those are already policies in place. So, you know, we're doing those things already. One of them is to look at reducing parking requirements. The council's already made a stated goal of that. So there's overlap with things here that staff is already doing or will be doing that are consistent with council policies. What the Planning Commission did do is eliminate things like transportation demand programs, which would have required ordinances to be adopted. There are very few ordinances or policies that we would really have to come back with in the near future for the council to consider. Most of these are coordinate with other agencies or, you know, whether that's transit or energy efficiency groups. So there is work to be done, but I think this has kept a lot of the formal ordinance writing to a minimum.
Good.
Councilmember Nichols, did you have questions?
I don't have a question, but I would like to make a comment. I think the Planning Commission, and particularly current chairman, I think John LaFleur, is the chairman. I think they've done an outstanding job. I really do. Having read through the minutes of the meetings when they discussed this, the work that they put into it, and I also compliment you for your guidance and direction in working with them on that. So I think they've done a great job. Anytime you're ready for a motion, I'll move it.
We need to open for public comment. I have one question before we do that, and that is, you mentioned that you'd made some helpful. Thank you. So I'm going to open for public comment. Seeing there's no one out there, we'll bring it back to the council. And I did want to make one comment, and that was that I've been really impressed with the work that you've done and the work that Chair LaFerriere did and the Planning Commission. And I know one of their comments was, can we make sure that the reductions we make are business friendly? And I'm glad that they kept that in mind since it's our first priority. And they did catch really a quite significant error and had to spend quite a lot of time speaking with our supervisor and his assistant and trying to get all that resolved, and did a very good job on it, very good catch. And I'm very thankful to them for being such a good on-target commission. So motion, did you want to make a motion? Councilmember Nichols?
I sure will. I will move staff recommendation that we accept the Planning Commission's recommendations on the greenhouse gas reduction measures to be included in the Climate Action Plan.
We have a motion from Councilmember Nichols. Do we have a second?
I'll second that, unless the APCD representative would like to do that.
No.
Okay. I will second that then.
All right. We have a motion and a second from Councilmember Lee. Could we have roll call, please? It is a roll call. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
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 Yes. And then finally, we have a review of the resolutions to be considered at the annual League of California Cities Conference, and City Manager Peralta is going to take care of that.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, the League of California Cities is coming up in September, and during that meeting, your delegate will be asked to vote on a couple of resolutions. These resolutions are used to set policy for the League of California Cities and direction, if you will. There are only two resolutions that are being posed this year, and this is your opportunity to provide any direction that you may want to your delegate in terms of the way to vote on these items. The two resolutions, the first is a resolution calling upon the governor and the legislature to work with the League of California Cities in providing adequate funding and to prioritize water bonds to assist local government in water conservation, groundwater recharge, and reuse of stormwater and urban runoff programs. The essence behind this is that dealing with clean water requirements, regulations, as we well know, EPA requirements, regulations that come down to us in the form of stormwater requirements, all of these end up being essentially unfunded state mandates, and they have quite a cost associated with them. What the league is looking for is an opportunity or to provide some direction to the league leadership and the governor and the legislature to sit down, take a look at some of the funding resources that are made available through the water bond program, et cetera, and talk about prioritizing the use of those funds in such a way that it can help, potentially help, local government with offsetting some of the costs required with implementing these regulations. The other resolution deals with the realignment program in terms, this is the early release program. It was the governor's proposal, as you remember, about 18 months ago or 2 years ago to essentially reduce the prison population in order to meet judicial mandates, set up a realignment program, and basically allowed for the early release of certain prisoners or the housing of those prisoners at the local level. The governor at the time promised that they would find constitutional revenues that would be used to offset some of the local costs for dealing with these items, and that hasn't been forthcoming. There have also been additional issues associated with their early release program, and the chief as president is really more able to address those issues if you have questions. This resolution is calling on the governor and legislature to enter into discussions about really finding the funds to, as they promised, to fund realignment and making some better definitions as to the implementation of the program. Should note that in that package there are a number of letters and resolutions that you see. In order for a resolution to be submitted to the Assembly now...
Discussion?
Just a couple of comments. I was looking at the resolution for the stormwater and looking specifically at page 6. And then the last whereas statement. And about halfway down, I think it looks like the fourth line, it says, starts off, many local governments find they lack the basic infrastructure to capture, infiltrate, and reuse stormwater. And it might be nice just to consider adding the funding portion into there. So I would say something like, many local governments find they lack the basic funding to finance infrastructure to capture. Just something to consider.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, I like that.
And then the subsequent page 7, top of the page, that whereas... Yeah.
No, probably not.
Yes. If I may, Honorable Mayor.
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, as far as the language of the resolutions, fait accompli. They are what they are. They've been crafted by the various committees, I think environmental, in this in particular instance, public safety committee in the instance of the realignment bill. I think what's before you is a deliberation as to how you wish your representative to vote on the resolution as presented. But your point is well taken.
I agree.
I had a better point on the next page, but I guess it's just moot.
Well, I guess you're going to have to get on one of those committees.
I guess so.
Get them to do
it
right.
I support both these resolutions.
I would be interested in hearing your further comments. Even though we may not change a resolution, I would appreciate you.
Okay, maybe it wasn't that good, Bill. And the next page, the top, the very first whereas, they talk about cities have seen their costs with the new MPDS permit requirements double. Mm-hmm. I think it should say the permit implementation requirements, including testing and reporting. Because really, I mean, that's where we get stuck, and that's where we did get stuck recently, is from the cost to try and implement the plan, and it is in the reporting. Mm-hmm. And it should just be clear that we're asked to do a lot. All the agencies are, and we're just not funded.
Madam Mayor, if
yes.
I could, a suggestion there. As I indicated, letters are of support are still important, and I would suggest that what the council could do is, in addition to taking a position on this, we could certainly draft a letter for the mayor's signature that would indicate that this particular council has certain issues with funding and implementation, as the council member has outlined, if the council so desires.
I think that's a great idea.
I'd support mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Get down as much. I mean, you just went through.
Let's
this,
get so really specific about what the problems are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's good. So
good.
If there's no other comment, then you can entertain a motion.
Well, I'll move. What are we asking?
I think you're directing, or maybe we're just giving direction to us to vote accordingly. So
let's see.
Provide direction. Okay, we got the direction, I suppose.
Provide direction. Mm-hmm. Actually, is there? There is no real action.
Do you have to?
Do you support or not support?
You need to instruct the delegates how
right.
to vote on these.
Right.
So are you in favor of staff's recommendations?
Make good choices.
Well, see, I think this is one of those cases where you can direct us how to vote.
Oh.
I think it's a different situation.
Oh, gotcha.
So you can tell us what to do.
Well, I'll move that that our council, our representatives, support both resolutions, and that we also draft a letter that the city manager draft a letter for the mayor's signature.
It would support the resolution, but also indicate where our particular issues came up, just to make sure that they're recorded in the minds of everyone else that's looking at this.
What he said. That's
the motion. Yeah, sounds good. So we need a second. Motion from Councilmember Marshall and a second from Councilmember Nichols. And we're all in favor. Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Okay, unanimous.
Have fun at the hearing.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Thank you for going.
So we have no pulled consent agenda items. We do have council committee reports. Mayor Pro Tem Bright is ill this evening, so we won't be hearing from her. Council Member Lee, do you have anything to report?
I apologize. Do we not have item one more item?
Oh, do we?
I think it comes later.
After. Oh, it is. Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we don't. Okay, I'm reading from the official agenda.
Perfect. I apologize. I was in the wrong order. So yes, I do have I think I gave my chamber report earlier, and no new information from the visit San Luis Obispo County, except for the fact that I've got a meeting on Wednesday for that I'll be able to attend. And
sometime in.
What did we do with those last year?
Usually they're offered to both the council as well as individuals that end up staffing the event.
Yeah. And I did talk with Parks and Rec Director, Program Director Petker, and she was anticipating receiving tickets as well. I'm not sure if it's six or if it's another.
Well, there was a report early on that said six tickets were okay. being given to each of the participant cities.
I will ask that question on Wednesday.
Okay.
And Councilmember Marshall, did you have anything to report?
I don't.
No?
There hasn't been a meeting that I've.
Okay. Councilmember,
better look out to Jim Copsey though to make sure I didn't miss
no.
anything. Okay, good.
Councilmember Nichols, do you have anything to report?
The Five Cities Fire Authority met at the end of July, and as a result of the resignation of Ms. Hurdle from the Oceano Community Service District, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, she resigned from that, and her alternate, which was Karen White, is now the regular. Member of the Five Cities Fire Board, and she was sworn in at our last meeting. We also annually elect new officers. I am currently, will be for the next year, the chairman, and Joe Costello from Rio Grande is the vice chair.
Congratulations.
I guess.
Condolences.
The board did approve the employment of David Matthey as a consultant. He has been a consultant to the board for a number of years. He will continue in that capacity under contract. And he does a great job. He is the one that set up that whole schooling operation back in Maryland, which was very successful. He will continue working on that sort of program. He is working on what?
emergency management training.
Yeah, emergency management training.
But yeah, he's working on that right now, and he'll be presenting that to all of the communities within the county. And in addition to that, the board also approved the chief's response to the grand jury. His responses were pretty much the same as the responses that were submitted by this council as a result of the putting together a dispatch service, fire service, and so forth. That's the only meeting I have to report on.
Thank you. And I don't have anything to report on. I have several next week and one that Mayor Pro Tem Bright attended, so we'll wait on that. Well, the only thing is South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, our last meeting, we did talk about bringing someone in to help us fund some of the future work that needs to be done there, so to help us with the finances, and we should be hearing about that, perhaps not the meeting in 2 days, but perhaps in the first meeting of September. And so now we move to city council member items. Anybody got anything they wanted to bring up?
Yes, I do have. Each one of you take one of those. I had noticed the painting done on the electrical boxes that in San Luis Obispo. I went over and took these photographs of the different boxes and how they've been painted. I thought